Welcome to the first ever episode of the Globe Gazers podcast, where we cover current and relevant events on planet Earth.
And it's BBC Reimagined. Okay, we'll be starting off with Belarus and talking about its election. And then
before that, let's do some introductions.
So I'm Avestia, and I was the researcher for Kamala Harris as vice president.
I'm Arya, and I was the researcher for the Belarus election.
And I'm Anch, and I will be covering up about Trump's plans and what he has done.
So I started off with our main topic for the day, which is the Belarus election. So basically, let's just sum it up in one word. It's the entire thing is corrupt. And Europe declined the election for this year, so we're not even sure if it's going to happen. What do you guys think about it?
Just to give all of our listeners a quick review of what happened, it started off with an election where the current president, Lukashenko, who has been the quote-unquote president for 26 years, he's leaning towards a dictator by now. But he won this previous election against a pretty strong teacher, a teacher, Svetlana Tikhanovskaya. She was supposed to be quite a good candidate, but he managed to beat her 80-10. Which was actually quite a large margin, as you can see. And well, given this, there is protests have erupted all throughout Belarus and has been causing turmoil. And if the election was really true or if the election was corrupted.
Yeah, this has really brought a lot of attention to times in the past as well, because Lukashenko has been president for 26 years. And the fact that he managed to beat this candidate who was a very good opponent, such a big margin, it brought a lot of attention to past years as well. So Charles Michel, the president of the European Council, said that the EU will impose short-term sanctions on a lot of individuals who are responsible for violence, repression, and election fraud. The last crime is something which has brought the attention of people all over the world to Belarus.
Also, Ursula von der Leyen, the president of the European Commission, the executive arm of the European Union, said, "We support the Belarusian people in the path they choose to go down." She said that Commission would repurpose $63 million in assistance away from the Belarusian government, with $2.4 million going to victims of the violence, $1.2 million to civil society and independent media, and the rest to fight against the coronavirus.
While stating that Europe stands for the people of Belarus, Mr. Michel said that any resolution of crisis must be found in Belarus, not in Brussels or Moscow. That might be initiated under the auspices of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, to which both Russia and Belarus belong.
I kind of just wanted to add on to what Anj said. So, something which has been a big thing in Belarus is Moscow. And the European Union has been very specific about not actually giving full and complete support and overt support to the Belarusian opposition, because that might give Moscow a pretext to intervene with force.
In a media message by the European Council before the meeting, the opposition leader, Svetlana Tikhanovskaya, who is now in Lithuania because she fled as she risked death by her opponent, Lukashenko, called on Europe to support the awakening of Belarus and not to recognize these fraudulent elections. She said the opposition had named a National Coordination Council to press for new elections and a transfer of power, both of which have been rejected by Mr. Lukashenko.
And going back to what Augustia said about trying not to give other people influence on their election, it's just to put it into easier perspective, imagine if, let's just say you live in, I don't know, Nebraska or something, and you're trying to elect your governor. How would it feel if your current president had complete control over who you choose to elect?
And just for clarity, we're not talking about President Trump here. We're just giving an example.
Yeah, just saying president in general.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with you, Arya, because it is the Belarusian people. It's their responsibility to decide who they want to vote for. It's not some external power who all of a sudden gets to choose that, okay, this person has to be in power now, because that's very medieval. It's not something which happens.
I definitely agree with what Arya was saying about how it is the Belarusian people's job and responsibility to elect a person of their own choosing. It's not the responsibility of some outside power to come in and intervene with the Belarusian government and the Belarusian people.
And they're having four Central European countries, the Czech Republic, Hungary, Poland, and Slovakia, who have jointly called for a new presidential election in Belarus, even though this means nothing, because the Belarusian people will have their own say and their whole control of their decisions, no matter what.
Yeah, I think Belarus is making huge mistakes by letting these other countries influence anything about their policy.
Especially because there are already pretty harsh sanctions on both Belarus and Russia. So, I mean, these same countries have placed such big sanctions on them. And I definitely agree that it's not bad of the other countries to call for a new presidential election. But there are two sides to the story.
But really, Europe's ability and force demands is really thin. And no European country is going to go to war over Belarus. There are already relatively harsh sanctions, as you said, in place, especially since the annexation of Crimea.
By the way, people in Belarus are so mad that they're causing these insanely violent riots in the streets, which is somehow scaring away their own police department.
That is not too great, as you need some law enforcement to even keep things under control.
Yeah, actually, I think this is a relevant quote from Sergei V. Lavrov, who is Russia's foreign minister. And the quote is, "I'm not saying that elections were ideal, of course not. I would like to recommend to everyone not to use the difficult situation in Belarus to derail a normal, mutually respectful dialogue between the authorities and society." But I don't really see how this is a mutually respectful dialogue. There have been violent protests about Mr. Lukashenko, and there's a lot of things going on in Belarus that are not orderly, that are not normal. As Mr. Lavrov said.
Speaking of foreign power, the foreign minister of Lithuania, which borders Belarus, succeeded in his effort to get Brussels to establish a fund to help the victims of the Belarusian oppression. Brussels could also build on existing efforts by non-governmental organizations to help Belarusian civil society and the political opposition, both within and outside the country, much as the West quietly helped the solidarity movement in Poland in the 1980s.
Also, there's a lot of things going on between countries nowadays. So, Dmitry S. Peskov, who's Mr. Putin's spokesman, told journalists that the Kremlin the Russian military has always been there to aid Belarus, but now they're not offering help anymore. So that could also mean a lot of different things.
Yeah, because, I mean, the officials in Moscow have definitely said that They've definitely said that they're not pleased with all the Western attention to Belarus, like from England, from the US. But they also didn't outright and overtly support President Lukashenko.
Yeah, when a country doesn't support, like when an ally doesn't support their other ally's president, you know there's a problem.
Well, I don't think they don't support them. I just don't think that it would be politically good for them to outright support him when there's so many tensions going on about fraudulent elections there.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to outright place their support with somebody who, well, for all means, has been accused of rigging elections.
Yeah, I'm being a dictator, especially in this modern era of the world.
Yeah, and it's more than just, like, if he's actually a dictator, it's mainly that there are other people who are saying that he is, so it would not be politically good for Russia to go and support him.
And at the same time, Mr. Lesser said the West can provide financial and capital support to opposition actors themselves. Many of them have already left or been forced to leave Belarus.
Just like the opposition leader.
Just like Slovenia, Shkinovia.
Yep. How else do you really put it? Is there another word you can use besides corrupt?
Well, this would definitely be disorderly.
It's messed up. I don't think this is how any sort of government should be running.
Yeah, I definitely agree, because we are not in a position to talk about Mr. Lukashenko and say if he's a dictator or not. We don't live in Belarus, and we're not informed enough to say that particularly.
Yeah.
But just the state of things, the protests, which are much more violent than the things which have been going on in the US. The political unrest, it's crazy. It's not how a modern day country should be run. Because we as people, as outside spectators, we can't particularly give an opinion which is accurate in comparison to the people of Belarus.
Yeah.
This is one of the many elections going on this year. Another important election that is happening this year is in November, where it will be the Democratic nominee, President Biden, versus the Republican nominee, President Trump. To get to this election and try and win it, Trump has sometimes been doing some things which may be considered unlawful. And according to the California Post, there is tons of mischief that can be done within the legal boundaries by a determined president to win the election, especially with the compliance of the attorney general, in this case, William Barr, and enough political allies in the state capitals.
Yeah, definitely. I think one big thing which has happened, and it might not be considered big to some people, but Trump opening up the refuge, a refuge in Alaska to oil and gas companies, has been unprecedented for many people. The Trump administration has made the final plans to finally allow drilling in the Arctic, which environment advocates called the nation's last great wilderness.
Also, quick disclaimer, when we say something big, we don't mean it's bad or if it's good, we're just saying it's an extreme measure.
And especially here, that's a goal which the Republicans have been trying to do for almost 40 years, since the Reagan administration. In this refuge, it is 90 million acres, called the ANWR. In the refuge are polar bears, foxes, and other animals. And the indigenous people also live there, including the caribou, which they eat.
And this thing that they're trying to get through is going to open up a whopping 1.6 million acres of that.
Well, I think there's something, while we definitely hear the climate activist side where they say that oil spills could harm the sanctuary, fossil fuels are being produced. I think there's also the side where this is a move by Trump, which it's creating a lot of jobs, and it will definitely win him some voter support, I believe.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's definitely going to win him something.
It's going to win him something because he's creating jobs, which is always considered a good thing.
And people who've been around since the Reagan era are definitely really happy about this.
And I think this was also kind of a big part of Trump's 2016 campaign as well, where he was talking about opening jobs and reopening things for these oil companies, gas companies, coal companies, kind of reigniting the spark, which at one point it was America's greatest achievement.
Yeah. I think it's just all about the... In this case, I feel like it's some sort of measure of being patriotic.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely a lot of people who would like this move by Trump. But
it's according to an attorney, Chrissy Montiel, she thinks it's absolutely bonkers to endanger this beautiful place during a worldwide oil glut, especially when we have tons of oil everywhere else in the world.
Yeah, and oil spill in the special sanctuary could devastate polar bears and caribou and cause an irreparable harm to their pristine Arctic ecosystem.
Yeah, and there's expansion. There will be an expansion of fossil fuels as well, which has been the focus of a lot of climate activists. And just for context, this is burning the ozone layer, increasing heat, things like that.
The climate activists could be a bit extreme.
Yeah.
I think it really depends on your perspective, because they're both sides of the equation. Donald Trump has called climate change non-existent. And then climate activists have, like AOC, have responded in other extreme measures. So I really don't think we should be looking at the extremes in this situation.
I mean, yeah, we want to look at the most relevant and possible things that could happen.
Sure. Yeah, like things which could happen if drilling starts, things which could happen tomorrow.
Uh-huh. And, you know, here's some direct quote. This is a direct quote from Donald Trump that he said on Twitter like 2 years ago. He said, "The concept of global warming was created by and for the Chinese in order to make U.S. manufacturing non-competitive."
So share all this, if this is really true or not. It might be some inside intel, but it's likely not true with the information the public has.
I think it's, yeah, definitely a more extreme view of the climate situation. But I kind of want to get back to what I was saying about immediate harm, such as oil spills and actual devastation of glaciers, snow, by actual machines.
Yeah, I think the machines is the biggest thing to take from this, because that one of those can destroy an entire landmass for the rest of its existence.
And a single oil spill can devastate all life there for ages to come. Like there have been oil spills throughout history in oceans, which have caused, even up till now, there are whales, fishes coming up on sea dead, something like that in the Arctic, which has so much wildlife, which is relatively untouched by now. Mm-hmm. It would be absolutely devastating.
One other thing what President Trump did was take away some of the funding from the Postal Service, an integral part of the way the U.S. shall function for this year's election, especially due to a surge mailing voters due to the coronavirus. Due to this, Pelosi called House members to return to the Capitol for a vote on legislation that aims to protect the Postal Service from the changes which the president is trying to impose.
I think he's just really scared at this point of losing the election.
And Louis Cajoli, a major donor to President Trump's campaign, was made the Postmaster General in June. And that's probably who he's using to make these specific changes, as he probably follows President Trump quite well. Due to this, a trial was conducted on him.
Yeah, and Representatives Hakeem Jeffries and Ted Lieu urged FBI Director Christopher Wray to investigate whether DeJoy's acts were illegal in light of the overwhelming evidence that he hindered the passage of mail.
I think that in this case, there's a lot of facts we can cite, but I think it's more important for us to talk about actually what this means for our country. The fact that the president has been trying to reduce mail-in ballots, which have been used in the past, and they are part of a U.S. person's right to vote.
Yeah.
It hinders people from voting if you do not have a mail-in ballot, especially in times like this. And it could be seen as unconstitutional for Donald Trump to be removing funding for the Postal Service.
In general, let's say that the main people that are going to go to the polls, in this case, and vote, will be mainly Republicans, because that is who Donald Trump's party is, and he has been leading a false message that the coronavirus is pretty much taken care of, even though it's very, very easy to contract it. And the Republicans who are following him will be probably the only ones who think it is safe and will go and vote in the polls.
Yeah, I think even this week in the Republican National Convention, there have been a lot of messages about people getting the will to get up out of their house. And I think even after the convention, there have been times where he wasn't wearing a mask, where some of the Republicans were not wearing masks. After the convention, not in their isolated places. I mean, I suppose the same thing happened with a couple of Democrats. But I think the Trump administration in general has been sending a message saying that COVID-19 is not as serious as it is said to be by the media. And they're encouraging people to get out and vote, which I suppose is a double-edged sword.
Well, there's two sides to it, right? First things first, you definitely want your country to vote. That's something you really want. That's something that's going to boost your government, and it's really going to help you carve the future for your country. But there's COVID-19 going around. Do you really want maybe like 1,000 people at one in one line waiting for just to drop in their ballot and go?
And just in general, I don't think any of them might even social distance.
Well, I suppose they have been going, during the convention at least, they have been following social distancing pretty well. But I suppose, I think after the convention, where they've been actually getting out and there have been people around them, that's when things have gotten a bit out of hand.
And going back to what Ansh said earlier, I don't think it's the safest thing to imply that just because you're Republican, you don't care that there's coronavirus and you can go out. But like, but here's the thing. There are so many people in America that don't even care that it's there, right? So why does removing mail-in ballots affect them at all?
Yeah, exactly.
Recently said by Chief of Staff Mike Meadows was that most Democratic concerns were part of a narrative that's not based on facts, which is unlikely true.
Well, yeah, but I think that pretty much sums up what President Trump has been going with removing mail-in ballots, telling people to vote in person. Because, I mean, voting in person, it sparks COVID-19, but It also helps with making sure that votes are not tampered with, which is definitely, it's a true concern. But, I mean, is it really, it's a true concern, but is it a valid concern in 2020 this year?
Just a general statistic. In the whole of Washington State's election this year, there were only 35 ballots which were frauded. And the whole of Washington State is mainly voting by mail.
And guess what? That's a problem that 35 ballots were fraud. It's 35 ballots can translate to a lot.
Really?
Think about it. It's 35 from Washington State, and Washington State's not even near the most populous state.
Sure.
So you put that into a bigger scale, maybe.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Yeah, 35 people can always expand. I think that's the main problem with these type of contagious diseases is that they always
expand. On the other side of this November's election is Joe Biden with the Democrat Party. Along with him is his vice, presumptive vice president, when he wins, Kamala Harris. She's breaking many barriers to get to this point, as she is the first Black woman on a vice presidential ticket and the first South Asian vice president.
And what makes this even more historic is that there are multiple sources, including Politico and Associated Press, that say Biden is currently indicating that he will not serve a second term if he is elected. And this would put Biden's running mate, or that would put them ahead in the polls for the 2024 election, which would make Kamala Harris even more historic.
And could make her the first Black woman elected in the 2024 election.
Not well, the first woman elected.
True.
Yeah. Here's another thing, though. There are so many things start saying Biden's not even going to try to serve his term.
The second term. Yeah, definitely. Because I think he's, how old is he this year?
82?
Yeah, we'll
something like that.
No, he's 77.
Oh, oops.
Yeah, well, I mean, 4 years can take a toll on a person, but that's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to give you some information on Kamala Harris. So I think let's start with her history.
She was originally the district attorney for San Francisco, and then became the attorney general for California, and then later ran for a Senate seat and took office in 2017.
And even before she went into public service, an important thing which she did was she was a private attorney who took on many cases on abuse and similar issues which were contested. As a private attorney, she worked on a lot of controversial issues as well.
Here's a concern though. She's running with Joe Biden, right?
Yeah.
But she almost beat Joe Biden as a Democratic nominee because she openly completely just like enforced in everyone's minds about Joe Biden's weaknesses.
I think she even actually, there was one issue which was a very big deal during the Democratic debates, which was when Joe Biden was talking about busing, desegregation busing. Kamala Harris told him that she was one of those people who were part of that desegregation movement in busing, where when Joe Biden was saying that it was a bad movement and things like that, which there was a lot of tension between them.
I personally don't think the air has been cleared yet.
I mean, yeah, our... Because it was a very tense thing where Biden told her that she was misrepresenting what he said, and she was painting him as this more racist person, even though she never said that, and he never said that as well, actually.
Yeah.
But it was sort of implied throughout the conversation.
One of her main cons, though, is that she ran one of the most underwhelming presidential campaigns in modern memory.
I wouldn't even say modern memory. I'd probably say one of the most underwhelming in history.
I mean, she was a front runner, but she fizzled out around September this year. Well, not September this year, sorry. She fizzled out around earlier this year. Yeah, At first, she was very strong, going on strong. And, well, we actually don't know what happened then.
Well, she's not going to get support if she's not, if any of her campaign was really, really new.
Well, I think a lot of her history is actually, her history as DA and Attorney General, that has influenced a lot of people. Like, as District Attorney, she was notorious for going after many complicated issues, and as Attorney General, she's also famous for harshing on mortgage lenders being unfair. And even when she was told to give up and settle on the case by President Obama's administration, she went on and she won the case for the U.S. when it seemed like she wasn't going to. I mean, for California.
Yeah, but you have to really take it into consideration. I think personally, Joe Biden might have selected her just to get some extra votes out of other people.
It depends, because I mean, I've definitely heard her talk a lot about her plans, about her personal commitment and what she is going to do for the campaign, especially in the Democratic Convention. And one unique thing which she did is before, while she was Attorney General and District Attorney, she did not, she was said to have not, not cracked down hard enough on police brutality and violence against Blacks. But after George Floyd's death, she has really stepped up to the plate then, which has definitely increased a lot of support for her.
But you kind of have to admit, it kind of feels like she hopped onto a trend.
I don't know. I think politics is... She has definitely had a record of doing things as she believes them. Like when she refused to defend the voter-approved ban on same-sex marriages, which was Proposition 8, which completely influenced the decision to overturn Proposition 8 in 2013.
Well, I mean, okay, let's just talk about something here. She is very well positioned to be the Democratic Party's presidential nomination in 2024 to 2028, but she isn't the most poised to win the election. So are you really going to try to nominate someone that doesn't really have a good chance at winning?
I think
they nominate in that sense. I doubt it's gonna be Bernie unless something happens, because he's a bit too much toward the left to get some of the more moderate voters.
He's a little too much on the like socialist side of things.
Well, I mean, 2024 is a long time, right? Yeah. I think first we have to even look forward to this election before we start thinking going to 2024. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think today we have covered a lot of things about elections. First, we covered the Belarus election, where we talked a lot about how Belarus is going away from democracy subtly. And also, we talked about how people in Belarus are doing violent protests on the president because he won by such a margin against the opposition candidate, who was seen to be a very good opposition leader. And he won by such a margin, which alerted people to the fact that there might actually be voter fraud in Belarus. And from there, we talked about President Donald Trump's campaign. We talked about his move in reopening oil and gas companies, inviting them into a refuge in the Arctic. And we talked about how that might help him win voters. We also talked about his postal service, his actions on the postal service, and his skepticism on mail-in ballots. And we talked about how this may or may not be unconstitutional. Finally, we talked about Kamala Harris and what she means for the United States if Joe Biden wins this presidency. When we were talking about Kamala Harris, we talked about her history and her position on some key issues.
And that's for today's episode. Thank you from Ansh, Arya, and Agustia. Hope you tune in next time.